Hi folks, welcome to the fifth and final part of Tips and Tricks with the VS Debugger. I'm Brian Hitney, Developer Evangelist with Microsoft. And if you were following me through parts 1 through 4, thank you for coming back. Just to recap what we talked about in those other parts, part 1 dealt with setting breakpoints. Parts 2 and 3 dove into advanced breakpoints, specifically the location breakpoint modifiers such as hit counts and conditions. Part 3 got a little bit more advanced with those conditions, and we talked about some filtering and multi-threaded techniques. Part 4 dove into the watch window and the immediate window. Now part 5, I'd like to talk about the set next statement, working with the .NET reference source code, and some tips with exception handling and some visualization you could do with MOL. So let's just exit right out and get right to it. Here we are in the same project we were working with in parts 1 through 4. The only other change you may have noticed is that I'm using Windows Vista here instead of Win 7. That's because the next demo that I have is using the .NET reference source code, and at the time of this recording, those public symbols are not yet available. So I'll go ahead and go into the call a bunch method, and the first thing we're going to look at is the set next statement. So to do that, I'll click the call a bunch button here, and we'll hit our breakpoint, and then we'll dive into the call a bunch method. Now, as you might remember, call a bunch simply keeps track of a static int, and if it's divisible by 5, we say you've hit 5, otherwise haven't hit 5 yet. So as I come through here, you'll see that mStaticInt changes from 0 to 1. And as expected, haven't hit 5 yet. Now sometimes what we'd like to do is debug a different branch of our if statement. For example, you might have a condition that's very difficult to fake, such as checking whether or not you're out of disk space. In that case, what we could do is we could drag the instruction pointer here, the arrow in the gutter, to the next line of code that we'd like to execute. So for example, I can bring this back up to the top. So the next line that we're going to execute again is incrementing the static int value. So I'll click over that. Notice now that it's changed to 2 and so on. And we can keep doing this as much as we'd like. Or if I really would like to go down this path, I can simply drag the instruction pointer right here. And now we're going to come down to you've hit 5. Obviously, we need to be careful when using this because it can corrupt our application. But it's still very useful in a variety of situations. Additionally, you can right-click on a certain line of code and say set next statement, and then it will simply move the arrow to that location. You cannot, though, set a location outside the current scope. So here we are in the call a bunch method. If I try to drag and drop that arrow outside the current method, it won't be permitted. So we'll continue execution here. Now the next thing I'd like to do is look at using the .NET reference source code in our applications. So to get started using the .NET reference source code, the first thing we'll do is set up a folder to store all of the local symbols. In this case, I created a folder on my C drive, Microsoft Symbols, and as you can see, it's empty. Then what we'll do is we'll go to Tools, Options, Debugging. The options we're interested in here is the option for Enable Just My Code, and then Enable .NET Framework Source Stepping. And when we enable .NET Framework Source Stepping, you'll see that it automatically disables Just My Code. The next thing we'll do is we'll go down to the Symbols folder. And we'll set the default location for the Microsoft Symbols server. The next thing we'll do is right here is we'll specify the path that we just set up for our Symbols cache. We'll say OK. Now we're already in a debugging session, so it will go ahead and download the symbols. Otherwise, it would do it the next time we started the debugger. And as it's downloading, you'll see if we go back to Microsoft Symbols folder here, you'll see that this folder is slowly getting populated with all of the references that we need for our application. Okay, symbols have just completed, and if I look in the symbols folder here, you'll see that we have all the reference assemblies here downloaded. What we'll do is we'll go back to our deep stack button, and you might remember from way back when we had a something to do class. And in our something to do class, all the way at the end, we had a console.WriteLine statement. So if we go ahead and click deep stack, you'll see that we hit that console.WriteLine statement. Now typically this is about as far as you can go because the console class is part of the framework. But if we enable .NET Framework source stepping and we've downloaded the PDB files and source code, what I can do is I can F11 directly into this, and you can see that we are now stepping through parts of the .NET framework. This is incredibly useful if you're having some type of unexpected behavior or you're simply curious as to how parts of the framework are written. As an example, I had someone ask me why a system.io.file exists call was failing, even though a file was clearly present in the operating system. Well, this is a great chance to dive in and see what was going on that would cause that to fail. So in this case, we'll continue execution. Now, one of the more difficult aspects here is that every time we add a new assembly and start a debugging session, we have to download any symbols that we haven't yet downloaded. And that can take some time depending on the speed of our connection. So one of the ways this is mitigated is by a tool, I'll bring it up here, called NetMask Downloader. And it's a tool up on CodePlex, written by Karim Kuzmezer and John Robbins. So what this tool does is it downloads all the available symbols locally, and we do that in one shot instead of having to do it each time we start a project. So an example command line is right there at the bottom of the slide. What I've done in this case is I've downloaded NetMask Downloader, and I've written a simple command file here that will download all the symbols for .NET 2.0, 3.0, and 3.5. And what I'll do is I'll run that. Now what NetMask Downloader will do is it will look at our preferred cache folder that we've set up in Visual Studio, and it will download all the necessary PDB files to that folder. Now, suffice it to say, this is going to take some time, so I'm going to go ahead and stop this right now and run that at a different time. So next, I'll jump back to my Windows 7 machine for a few tips on exception handling. So within my button handler here, we have a simple try-catch. And within the try, we're going to just simply throw a new argument exception. So I'll start the debugger, and if I click exceptions, notice that when we ran this line of code here, in the output window, we have a first chance exception of type system.argumentException occurred in CS breakpoints. And that makes sense because we threw this exception, but then we handled it. So we never broke the debugger. So the difference between a first chance and a second chance exception is a first chance exception occurs whenever an exception happens within our application. Now, oftentimes, first chance exceptions don't necessarily indicate that there's a problem with your code, but the debugger is still notified of the exception. The default behavior is that we won't do anything when a first chance exception occurs. Now, if the user code does not handle that exception, the debugger is notified again, and that's called the second chance exception, and that's when we break execution. So we can change that behavior. If I go to debug exceptions, what we'll see here is a dialog box. Specifically, right in here in the common language runtime exceptions, we see thrown and user handled. Now, by default, the thrown box is unchecked. Now, we can dive in here and select specific exceptions if we'd like, but for the purpose of this example, I'll just click everything within CLR. Now, what will happen here is we click OK, and we rerun that section of code. Notice here that now we broke, and this is because a first chance exception occurred. Now, as I said, by default, we don't typically stop on first chance exceptions because a first chance exception can be legitimately handled, and it's only when we get re-notified of that exception through the second chance that it indicates a problem with our code. Nevertheless, it can be useful to catch first chance exceptions. For example, you might have code written that incorrectly handles an exception that causes a problem later on in your application. In this case, catching first chance exceptions may be useful to isolate where the problem is occurring within your code. The other thing we'll look at, I'll stop debugging here. There are a lot of frameworks out there for handling exceptions. There's the error handling block from the patterns and practices team, and there's a number of independent frameworks as well. Sometimes there's a little bit of confusion about rethrowing exceptions. Now generally, rethrowing exceptions is not typically a good practice, but there could be a few legitimate cases for it. So if I come in here, some people might rethrow an exception by doing that, where we say throw EX, which will throw the same exception that was caught. I don't recommend doing this. And the reason why is that when we throw an exception that we just caught, we lose the stack trace information. Better would be simply to use the throw keyword, and then that will rethrow the exception essentially as if we never caught it. Or we can throw a completely new exception. In this case, I'll just say argument exception, but we can put in any type of exception there and whatever message we'd like, and then notice that the exceptions have an inner exception property, and then we would just pass in the exception that we caught. And then that way, our user code that handles the exception can examine the inner exception for the stack trace and other relevant information. So lastly, I'd like to take a quick look at using MOLE when debugging our applications. MOLE is a visualizer for Visual Studio. Now, visualizers are used while debugging to view objects in a more friendly way. And by default, there's text, XML, and HTML visualizer. And there's also a dataset visualizer that you can use to view datasets and data table objects. When stepping through the debugger, visualizers can be indispensable when working with objects. But I should also point out that visualizers will only work when running a full trust environment. And what I've done here is I've downloaded MOL and I've extracted everything into a folder, and then I've got the compiled DLL for the visualizer right here. The source code is available so you can download it yourself. What we need to do is we need to take that DLL and copy it into our Visual Studio 2008 visualizers folder. Now by default, that folder is under your documents. You'll see that there's a folder in here called Visual Studio 2008. We'll dive in there, and then you'll see a folder called visualizers. We'll dive into that, and then I've simply copied mol.visualizer.dll into that folder, and that's really all we have to do to install it. We'll go back to that folder with the test bench projects, and we'll dive into a WPF test bench, and I'll open that solution. Now, one of the first things we need to do is set a breakpoint right here. You can see it noted here in the comments, and the reason why is we need to capture the control click event from the form. So we'll go ahead and start debugging. And here we have our test bench project. So anywhere from within here, if I can control click on an object, we'll break into the debugger and we can see how MOL works. So what I'll do is I'll control click here on select MOL, and we fit our breakpoint. Now if I hover over E, you'll see that we have this little magnifying glass icon. That means we have a visualizer we can use, and if I click that, by default what we'll do is we'll pull up MOL. And this is MOL right here. So we have a bunch of, you can see we have the large object tree over here with everything that we clicked on. In fact, if I just click off this text block here, you'll see that this is green, indicating that this is the original item that we clicked on. I can click on element visual up here, and we can see that I did click on select MOL. We can see what this entire tree looks like by just clicking somewhere else up on, higher in the visual tree. And if we come in here, we can edit any of these fields that we'd like. And one of my favorite things we could do is we could specify a bunch of these as favorite properties. And this is handy because much of the time you have properties that you're always looking at. For example, an objects collection or an items collection, something like that. And you'd like to float those to the top. So we can do that, and we can also edit all these values. Carl has put in a bunch of rich editors in here to make editing some of these colors, dates, fonts much richer. And then once we're done examining and debugging and changing any values we wanted to, we could just close MOL, and those values are written back. So it's a nice, rich experience. Now, Carl has a bunch of great videos up, so I don't want to spend too much time on it here, but we'll put that slide back up so you can catch the URL there. So check it out. It's on Carl Shiflett's blog. He's got a link to the Code Project site and a lot of the other videos that he's done. So that wraps up the fifth and final part of our Dev Nugget series on tips and tricks with the Visual Studio Debugger. I hope the content was useful, and if you have any suggestions for future content, please let me know.